This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least 3 times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there. Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday to you. Glad to be here with you on Sports Daily. It is 1 day away from the official start of the NCAA tournament, even though we had tournament games last night, including one essentially buzzer beater, and one that was about as far away from that as you could possibly be. The Shockers opened the NIT last night with a loss, and Oklahoma State, unfortunately, gave it a pretty good run, but we'll dig into that game and what went wrong and what it means and probably do some overall season evaluating, program evaluating today as well. As we make our way through, we'll get you ready for the KU opener tomorrow. Our KU insider, Sri Islata, joins us as well in the next hour. A lot of good stuff on the eve of getting out, hopefully, to Intrust Bank Arena and doing the show live at the end of the week, Thursday and Friday. So glad to be here with you. Jacob Albrock alongside Tommy Caster. Max Power is producing things for us. He's got the KFH hotline at 869-1240. We've got the ability for you to chat with us on our video streams as well. 12 News Plus, Facebook, YouTube, X, any way you're watching, you can get in touch with us. And if you're listening on the Odyssey app, you can leave us your voice messages. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I feel a little windblown this morning, walking in from the car into the studios here and leaving home. I spent a little bit of time this morning like trying to do my hair and, you know, all of that. And then I walk outside and it, you know, goes everywhere. So that's kind of the day today. Gotta keep a hold of your hats, and it's going to be breezy out there for sure.
Yeah, at least the wind dies by tournament day tomorrow. It'll be chilly in the morning when we're out there. I was joking with our program director when we were kind of just talking yesterday about the cold, and I said, I hope Tommy's ready to cuddle out there. I don't know what else to do. Just snuggle up. It's going to be chilly out there live at Intrust Bank Arena in the morning.
Just got to bundle up. I mean, wear the coat, wear the gloves, wear the hat. That's my plan.
Yeah, we'll probably be acclimated. It was only 80 degrees yesterday.
Yeah, it'll be okay.
You know, down to 30. But yeah, we'll survive it. It's going to be fun. It was not fun to see the outcome last night, unfortunately, for the Shockers as they go down to Oklahoma State, 89-79. We'll get into that. I do want to look, as you know, we evaluate things 2 years into the Paul Mills era. What do we think? What, you know, kind of a vibe check and then a, you know, numbers check of what that looks like historically. So we'll get into all of that. There's, you know, NFL news always. You heard Aaron Rodgers there in the NFL update briefly, still doesn't have a home. And I think the players are kind of sick of it, to be quite honest with you. So we can touch on that. We've got Major League Baseball out in Japan. Shohei Ohtani home run for the Dodgers in front of the home crowd. Kind of a cool moment. And then a coaching change that has everybody talking as West Virginia is now in the look for a new coach, Darian DeVries, after just 1 year, right, at West Virginia.
Yeah.
Heads on to Indiana. 1 year. I'm waiting for our haters of the transfer portal and athletes to chime in on Darian DeVries leaving West Virginia after just 1 year. I saw Jay Billis joke yesterday, and it's so right. The coaching portal's always open, right? Like, it never closes. And it's so true. And it's so funny to me that, well, you know, a lot of people wring their hands at players leaving places when coaches literally leave all the time, like in the middle of seasons or before seasons. Like, it's just ridiculous. It's fine that they want to leave. They have contracts and they buy those out. But I think the only answer is to put everybody under contract and just, you know, if coaches leave schools and they have big buyouts, maybe players leave schools early. They need to have buyouts. I mean, to me, that's the way to go. That's a simple way to go. But West Virginia, great program, looking for another coach.
I don't think there's been anybody that has had a worse week than the athletic director at West Virginia. With the snub into the NCAA tournament, when I think everybody and their dog in the country thought that they should have made it in to the NCAA tournament, and then they didn't. And then just a couple of days later, Darian DeVries bails to go to Indiana. It's been a tough week for him, for sure. But I think that it's a good move for Indiana. I think Darian DeVries is a stud of a coach. I didn't like the Mike Woodson hire at the time because I felt like, you know, college basketball is getting, you know, younger and they're finding, you know, new ways to get things done, kind of going to a retread. And Mike Woodson, I didn't feel like worked or would fit. I thought maybe temporarily it'd be okay as a bridge type guy, but I wasn't a fan of it long term. I really like this hire for Indiana. I think that DeVries can be there for a long time. I think he can win it a lot. And I wouldn't be surprised if he gets Indiana back to national relevance.
I wouldn't either. We've been saying that for a really long time with Indiana, though. And they've made some hires that we all thought would get it done. It's one of the great mysteries to me. I don't know how it has taken this long. In that time, they continue to bring in great players. It doesn't work. DeVries is a great coach. We looked back and, you know, he was a candidate at Wichita State. I don't know how much of a candidate was as he was. People liked him.
People wanted him. I'm not sure how much he was a real candidate.
But this is what I said to you last night. Looking at it now, had he come here and had some success, he'd have just been gone. I mean, he left West Virginia after a year. He wasn't staying in Wichita. So, you know, things happen for a reason, and the Shockers season ends on that same night. And so we'll evaluate that. We'll look at the game against Oklahoma State for sure. But then, you know, we'll take a look. I don't know. I think for sure, and we'll save it. But I think it's an interesting conversation to evaluate the Shockers season, program, and future. And the time is right to do it because their season ended. We know now they're not going to get a surprise invite to any tournaments or anything. We know it ended last night in Stillwater. Looking forward to talking to Shreyas Lada today. Get his take on KU. I don't think he agrees completely that it's a good draw. It's a good draw for KU, at least according to his article yesterday. So we'll get him to explain what he means in that as far as a luck. I think he called it lucky draw, I believe is a term he used. Don't want to put words in his mouth, but we'll get into that. Because, of course, I've told you anyway, don't want to speak for Tommy. I think it's a near perfect draw, all things considered, for KU in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. And we get ready for Wichita. Wichita's ready to host games. I think, you know, we got weather, the good weather. I mean, today's weather will be gone. So it's all there in front of us for Wichita to put on another great party. I think Wichita will put on another great party. I think the timing of the KU game, the placement, the day of the KU game will make for a pretty fun atmosphere. And we'll be out there ready to hang with people starting tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, and I feel like, of course, it's going to be chilly tomorrow morning for our show, but at least it warms up the rest of the weekend, and it'll be really, really nice, it looks like, for the remainder. So we just got to get through a few hours of, you know, cold morning weather on Thursday, and then it looks like it's just going to be beautiful with warm temperatures and light wind and just a perfect, you know, inviting atmosphere for fans from all the teams to come out and descend upon Interest Bank Arena. We'll be at Nafsker Park on the north side of the arena for Fan Fest. A big thanks to Parks and Rec with the city of Wichita for having us out at the big Fan Fest. Shout out to Taco Bell and Pizza Hut. They are making it possible for us to be out there. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to being out there starting tomorrow.
29 degrees in the morning when we'll be out there with a nice little breeze. But then it gets up to Looks like the upper 50s, maybe peaking at about 60. Breeze will pick up a little bit, but it'll be sunny. So wear a jacket. Definitely not. It's pretty normal March weather, I think. Maybe a little bit under. And then Saturday looks incredible.
Friday looks really good, too. It's going to be great.
Yeah. It'll be fun. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk Shockers when we return on Sports Daily.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We're glad to be here with you. Here's a giveaway for you. You've seen Tommy sporting some pretty cool clothes on Fridays from 35 by 70 Golf Co. For a couple months now, we're giving away your opportunity to get your hands on some of that gear. $120 gift card to be awarded to one lucky listener this week. You can enter once per day until Friday at 11 a.m., right when we go off the air there at Interest Bank Arena. To enter, all you got to do is text the keyword golf to the short code 20357. That's golf to 20357. Message and data rates apply. You can go to kfhradio.com. for more details. So good luck, everybody, with that contest. We'll have a little bit of HTO a little bit later for you, too. Tommy, we're coming out of a Shocker loss, which is too bad. I thought they had enough to beat Oklahoma State, certainly. Didn't get it done. It was, to me, boy, it was a pretty clear separation between the starters and the bench. They could not get anything from the bench last night. The bench was really, really bad. And while the starters played well enough to win that game, every time you'd get the second string in, it felt like the Shockers just fell apart a little bit.
Yeah, that was really a challenge because I know that Paul Mills was wanting to balance a little bit of a breather for, you know, the starters. And then at the same time, you know, still be productive, at least to a degree, with some of those bench guys. And they just weren't able to perform. There was a clear drop off, to your point, between the starters and the bench players. You know, specifically Mate Bosniak did not have a good game. Justin Hill did not have a good game. You know, that was a challenge, you know, for those guys. And I think it really ended up forcing Mills' hand. And, you know, the guys like Xavier Bell and Corey Washington, even Bijan Cortez, I don't feel like they were really able to get, you know, appropriate breathers just because they had to be in the game and they had to perform because the bench wasn't getting it done.
Yeah, it's too bad. It really is. Because you had so much momentum, right, going into it, and they couldn't do anything in those minutes. And it felt like they executed, the starters did, I thought, really well. You know, early in the game, there were no fouls being called. And when I saw that, I was like, this is going to be a problem. You saw Bryce Thompson give them the PJ Haggerty effect, which is, you know, that just can happen against
really
the Shockers, right? Like they are prone to that a little bit. And then you didn't see fouls being called. And I was like, well, they're not going to be able to match offense if they can't get to the free throw line. They're just not, especially not on the road. Well, then they started getting some whistles. And I was like, okay, now they're good. They settled in. And I thought the announcers were spot on it. Like they were clearly going into where they're comfortable, which is attacking the basket and trying to draw contact and get to the line. And they were doing a really good job of it too. Like really good job of it. And then they just couldn't, like, they'd get in there and they would, and you'd have the starters go off and you had defensive lapses and you had turnovers. Oklahoma State would just trap the ball every time across the floor with Hill, and it just didn't work and they didn't have enough. So I don't know, you know, I thought the effort was fine. I don't have a problem that Wichita State went on the road and lost Oklahoma State. it's unfortunate because at least I did. I don't want to speak for anybody else. I felt like that was a game the Shockers could have won. They just didn't get it done. And it, you know, it's too bad.
Yeah, I think there were a few other things too. I mean, I didn't love the defensive strategy, you know, specifically in the first half against Bryce Thompson. I felt like Wichita State kind of let him shoot those mid-range jumpers, which for a lot of players, that's a low percentage shot, but it wasn't for Bryce Thompson last night. And so at some point they needed to adjust to that. I think, honestly, a little bit sooner. And they really weren't able to do that. And I know that a lot of times, yeah, you're going to live with that kind of shot from a player taking that, but Bryce Thompson was hot, you know, at least in the first half he was.
Sure.
And I really felt like Wichita State kind of gave him that. And it was a situation where at some point you're looking at it and you're like, man, he's not missing from that distance. So we need to probably adjust what we're doing to make it a little bit tougher on him. That didn't, I don't feel like that happened quick enough in the game.
I think that's fair.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that's fair. And I think it's fair because we've seen that issue in other games. We saw it against Tulsa, a lack of a defensive adjustment. We saw it like really their three most recent games. They had the win in between there, but their three most recent losses, there's kind of a challenge in all of them is making a defensive adjustment. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, because Tulsa, it was that stretch when they were getting to the rim on like 10 straight possessions and there was really no adjustment. With Memphis and the loss in the AAC tournament, it was PJ Haggerty going crazy in there. And I think that was a combination of, you know, not a defensive adjustment, but then also Haggerty was just really, really, really good. And it was, you know, hard to just individually shut him down. But Bryce Thompson had a formula for the most part on what he wanted to do when he went down the court, and that was shoot mid-range jumpers, and the Shockers really didn't adjust to that the way that they should have. I was also really concerned going into the game, I talked about it yesterday, about Wichita State getting too sped up to try to keep up with Oklahoma State and the tempo that they like to play with. And I thought, you know what, if they can take care of the basketball and still play fast and keep up with Oklahoma State, that's great. But as soon as they start getting careless with the basketball, that's when things are going to become an issue. And the turnovers were a major issue against Memphis. They were an issue last night as well. And there were several possessions where I felt like they got sped up and they got a little bit faster than I think they wanted to and got a little bit sloppy with the basketball. So those were a couple of other things that I felt like were key to the recipe for Oklahoma State to get the win.
I agree, and it's too bad, because I really grew into this Shockers team and really liked them. Now what happens in the future, it just smacks you in the face. Paul Mills joked after the game, you know, that his friends are going to call him Portal Paul, and that's what you have to do. There's a lot of pressure next year now, because when we look at this season as a whole, it didn't feel, I don't think, disappointing in the sense of like the vibe we had going into yesterday and even this morning. The overall body of work at 19-15 and 8-10 in that league is disappointing. Absolutely is disappointing. It felt a whole lot better though by the end, because we know they started to play the way they were capable of playing. And so that helped.
And just at a straight baseline improvement year over year from a wins and losses perspective, there was improvement. Like, it wasn't a lot of improvement. And I think that expectation wise on what everyone thought they would, you know, get to this year, I think most people thought there would be a more significant improvement. But to be fair, wins and losses wise, there was a year over year improvement from year one to year two.
No question. I think there was an improvement of just take that part away and say the team was better, right? The program feels like it's in better shape. I do think there was improvement there as well. I'm encouraged by those things. They have a lot of work to do right now. Can they get another year from Ballard somehow magically?
Well, they
not
can.
Only do you have to
like he'll be, but will he return to Wichita State? That's the question.
Exactly.
He's eligible. But will he come back to Wichita State?
Right. Can they get another year out of Quincy Ballard? I think is a big question. Can they get Corey Washington to return? Right. And then can they find three other players to fit around them? I mean, maybe Zion Pipkin and TJ Williams can take a step as sophomores if they stick around. I mean, you've got to still get through your own internal turnover before you can really go into next year. that's a big question mark, right? Like it's in rough shape. And as I watched last night, Jerome Pierre tear it up in another NIT game and was like the fourth leading scorer in basketball this year. Wichita State has had a lot of really good players walk out the door. IB, for whatever you want to say, was a talent evaluator and got some really good players into Wichita. Paul Mills has to do the same thing. Has to do the same thing. And then, of course, coach them up when they get here. The task has never been harder for a coach. I get all of that. I also want to say, because Kevin Saul was here last week and the Shocker basketball program put out, you know, 34 wins, which is the number it stuck at, unfortunately, more than, you know, any coach since the 60s in their first 2 years. But I don't think it's fair to not point out that Isaac Brown had a higher winning percentage. Remember, he had two really shortened seasons, 22 games and 28, where Mills had 34 each way. But it was a better start than Greg Marshall had, a better start than Mark Turgeon had. I would tell you that it's not a better start than Eddie Fogler had in the 80s. Fogler, who reached the tournament in his first 2 years and played a far smaller number of games in his first 2 years. I believe he played 33 and 30. So he played about 10 or so fewer games, but he had a really high winning percentage. They didn't play as many games back in the day. So it's not quite fair. Same thing for Gene Smithson to say most wins, because I think winning percentage is more fair.
There's a little bit of context, I think, than just the straight up win number. But at the same time, you know, it doesn't take away from Paul Mills. And I go back to year number two. I go back to this season that we just wrapped up when things were down bad and it was, you know, it was tough. And there were a lot of questions like, what are they going to do? Like, this is not working. And credit Paul Mills, credit the players for sure, but credit Paul Mills for sticking with it, because they turned it around against some of the best opponents in the conference to be able to really pull their season out of the depths and get to a point to where they finished with the winning record. They finished, you know, I hate the fact that they lost to Tulsa on senior day, because that would have pulled them all the way to 500 in conference play. And that would have been, you know, just the cherry on top of the way that they started versus the way that they finished. But, you know, still 8-10 in conference after starting 1-7. You know, that I think you can hang your hat on that a little bit as a period of growth. Yeah. Getting a win in the AAC tournament, getting a postseason bid, regardless of the way that it all went down, you still got an NIT bid. You know, so there are things I think that you can tip your cap to a little bit. But as far as the future is concerned, I mean, you kind of laid it out. Ideally, the most by far ideal outcome and situation for Wichita State would be if you can return Quincy Ballard and Corey Washington. If you can get your front court to return and have another year in the system, another year in the program, then you can build around them and your front court is settled and good to go. I mean, Corey Washington played great down the stretch. Quincy Ballard, for the most part, has been steady Eddie throughout the course of the season. That's going to give the Shockers quite a bit of a leg up. And then, to your point, Paul Mills can dial in to the backcourt. You've got your front court settled. Dial into the backcourt and figure out a way where you can get guys that are great ball handlers, that are not going to turn the ball over, guys that are going to be able to make shots at a clip to where maybe you weren't able to get that done last season, and play great defense. I mean, obviously that's ideal, but if you can get your front court settled, then you can pour all your resources in finding the backcourt guys you need.
Finding shot makers has been Wichita State's problem for what? 5-6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
They had one. They've had them. They just weren't doing it at Wichita State. We've seen guys leave the program and go do it elsewhere. It's a big challenge. And I got to tell you too, like, there are, I don't know, about 200 teams that would be interested in the services of Quincy Ballard and probably Corey Washington, the way they played this year. This is where we see the strength of the program, I think, too. Is the program in a good enough place to retain players of that stature? We're about to find out, because people are going to come knocking.
And that's, by the way, that's the part of the transfer portal that isn't talked about. It's about going and acquiring players. That's really always been the focus. It's less about the retention of your current players.
Which the Shockers did good at last year.
And you know who the absolute king is of that right now is Kelvin Sampson. And what he does at Houston as far as retaining his players and keeping guys around, like, there's, he's the top of the class, the cream of the crop in the country as far as building that program. In fact, he's done such a good job at that that even Jerome Tang has pointed at Kelvin Sampson as the guy that he wants to emulate as far as retention and building a program and not just going and getting a brand new roster every single year. And so, you know, can Wichita State be Houston in that regard this season? No, probably not. But at the same time, that's an underrated and extremely important piece of the transfer portal. Not just about acquiring players, it's about retaining the guys that you want to bring back and that you need to be a nucleus of your team for, you know, another season and to build that continuity.
Yeah, and look, you hope you can keep the young players too, right? You hope that they'll grow in your program and become long-term players in the program, but I don't think Paul Mills has the luxury of focusing on that right now because they did not have a good enough year this year to build in the grace period for next year. And so as we evaluate this year, that's what makes it really difficult. Look, eighth in the conference is not good enough following 10th in the conference. Bottom line, this league is not good enough for Wichita State to finish 10th and 8th in back-to-back years. Holistically, from a far away level looking at it. This year has been so unique, though, because I think the program right this second, I think that the buzz and the energy for Shocker basketball is higher than what was inherited. So I want to say that. I also think we got to see some real coaching chops this year in how Wichita State started the year with a style of basketball that served them well, and then things fell apart, and they were able to stop and pivot the things that they do and the way that they play to find success again and have the players stay bought in and all those things. I think that stuff matters quite a bit, actually. And so that gives me a lot of hope, too. Those are the things that I'm sort of looking at and hopeful for, not so much the wins and losses, because the wins and losses flat are not good enough. They're not. We were told they weren't because Isaac Brown was fired, finishing in a better position in the league. So that part of it we know, but you got to look underneath that, I think, to really take the true evaluation of where things stand moving forward, because I don't think there's anybody that doesn't feel moderately optimistic about things, at least that I haven't, that I've talked to, that based on the way they were able to sort of refocus this year. But now you have to rebuild the roster.
Yeah,
and honestly, I don't know what that looks like.
A response to what you just said, I think that the truth can really lie somewhere in the middle. You know, I don't think that it's all the way to one side where it's, you know, we've seen enough to where, you know, Paul Mills is the savior of the program in the long term, like it's going to be incredible forever and back to the expectations that Shocker fans are used to. I don't think we know enough, even after 2 years, to be able to say that. You know, and knowing that, like, that I think that there's a little bit of energy, you know, moving that direction, which is good. But at the same time, like, you hear, like, Paul Mills has the third highest winning percentage in his first 2 years or whatever. Like, that paints a really beautiful picture when the
most wins, not highest winning percentage.
Yeah, most wins through the first 2 years. Like, that paints a really beautiful picture, but there's context around that. So it's not, like, total gospel. On the flip side, I don't think it is all that bad either, where it's like, well, IB had a better, you know, had a better first 2 years and finished better in the conference than Paul Mills did. So this is a disaster either. Like, I think the truth is somewhere in the middle between the two, like, beautiful, yeah, rosy picture being painted and everything is falling apart and terrible and we can't do this anymore. Like, that's what makes it so difficult to evaluate after two seasons is that, yeah, there's been incremental improvement from year one to year two. They're still not where the expectations, I think, everybody has for them. They're not meeting that at this point. It makes it really hard to assess overall, but I do think that the truth lies somewhere in the middle. It's not all bad, but it's certainly not all good yet either, and I think the jury is still overall out.
And it's hard also to evaluate Mills Brown versus their predecessors because they've now had to deal with the modern era of college, sure, basketball that none of those other guys did either. So bottom line, we don't know yet. And we go into year three, with retention being the most important front and center thing, to see if you can keep those two good bigs and see what else you can get around it. How are your allergies treating you, Tommy? Do you get allergies?
No, I don't. I'm not an allergy sufferer, which is good.
Man, you're so lucky. It is wild. Like, you can't sleep. Like, I would have never... I remember growing up, because I didn't have them before I moved here. It's the tree pollen, I guess, to apparently the allergy capital of the world, by the way.
Yeah, hey, you know, we can hang our hats on something in Wichita. We have the worst allergies in the country.
I believe it. I didn't have them growing up, but again, it's the tree pollen thing. So... I sit here and I remember, like, people would complain about their allergies. I'm like, okay, whatever. Now, like, you can't sleep because your eyes are watering and, like, you got, like, it's wild. It is a wild experience. I'm with you, fellow allergy sufferers. I feel for you. I feel for you. Cause I'm getting hammered. Sorry for everybody for having to look at my eyeballs right now and hear my nasally voice, but we'll get through it. Maybe this windstorm will blow them all away. If the last one blew them all in, maybe this one will blow them all away.
Hey, they always say that in the month of March, it comes in like a lion and out like a lamb. We're kind of right in the middle of that at this point, the transitional time.
Today is the lion. Tomorrow is the lamb. We will have some nice weather in for the tournament. Man, I have been so worried about that. So worried about that. After going to Omaha last year, kind of the same situation, right? Went to Omaha, was going there because you thought KU was going to go. It was kind of a guy's trip. It was going to be fun. And then they don't go. And then the weather's bad. And it was a very different experience than the other times I've been to Omaha. Got to be honest.
I got to tell you, now that we're a day away from the NCAA tournament in Wichita, I'm ready for it to be done because I feel like your anxiety has been through the roof about this tournament.
That it won't be a great party.
First off, with KU not being there, and then with the weather, like, you sound like my wife. Like, you are stressing out about everything.
And I'm not an anxious person. There's not real stress involved. I can tell you that. I don't stress about much. But I will tell you that my stress comes from all the people I know that invest so much time, energy, and resources into it. That what I fear for them now as a business owner is that it doesn't deliver the way it did in 2018. It will. It'll be fine. The weather looks great. It's going to be awesome. I'm so excited for it. I'm glad that we got the teams that we got. I still do wish KU would be here, but they're not. And we'll talk about KU and where they are, which is Providence with Shreyas Lada, as we get into the next hour. I want to just sort of continue, and we can put a bow on the Shocker talk here. I think, and this is right where we finished it, so we'll just sort of pick up. The other part of evaluating things now that makes it really hard for me is because coaches are being asked to do this thing that we as, like, the viewers and the consumers don't really know how to evaluate it yet. And I think, like, there are a handful of coaches that are really good at it right now, like, that have done it. You brought up Kelvin Sampson. Awesome. You know, Duke's done a really nice job with it. I'm trying to think of, you know, Auburn's been pretty consistently good. Alabama's been really good at it. But it hasn't been consistent. And even Bill Self. Now, Bill Self is, I think, you can put an asterisk because he has retained his players. They've just been players that have, you know, by their standard, produced back-to-back disappointing years. But I don't know how to look at this yet. How many years are we into this true madness? And again, I think it will settle down within the next, we'll call it 4 years. But we've only been doing this now. This is probably like the fourth or fifth true Wild West nature of this. The Shockers have dealt with it for longer. The Shockers have had a transfer out issue going back to Greg Marshall. That year he brought in a great talented freshman class and they all left, right? Like, so it's not new to Wichita State, but we're still trying to learn how to evaluate how coaches are doing within it, because, like, next year, what's the expectation? On March 19th, I feel like we have to have, like, zero expectation right now.
Yeah, I think that, again, it comes back down to the retention piece of it. I think you can start to build some expectations if you can get retaining a couple of players here and there, because then at least you know what you're working with. But when it's a full roster full of players, you know, potentially that are coming from other places, I mean, take a look at K-State. Like, all we knew last year going into it was what these players had done on paper that Jerome Tang had brought in. And all we knew was what, like in the case of Coleman Hawkins, he was getting paid to play at Kansas State and what he had done in his career at Illinois. We didn't know how it would translate to Jerome Tang's style of coaching. We didn't know how it would translate to just the overall atmosphere in Manhattan, all the different external things that come into play with it. And you had to sort of like throw a dart at expectations just because there was really no retention outside of David Gasson on that team. With Wichita State, I think going into this offseason, it's going to be kind of the same way. And, you know, depending on what the retention looks like from Paul Mills, it's going to be really hard in the offseason to fully evaluate and fully be able to set expectations on a team. A lot of it is, if it's a lot of brand new guys and they're all working together, how much time do you give them to gel? How much time do you give them to really like be able to settle in? And then I think the evaluation actually comes as the season progresses, as opposed to being able to look at a team from a year ago and say, all right, they're going to be returning most of these guys. They don't have to rebuild their entire team. We can set expectations accordingly during the offseason. That makes it really difficult to be able to assess.
Impossible to assess. What would you say right now? What would your expectation for next year be?
Well, look, I think that you have to look at it only through the lens of where, as a fan base and as a community, we feel like the Shockers should be. We did this exact same exercise at this time last year. It was, okay, going into year two of the Paul Mills era.
Without, right, but at that point, without we had even a better knowing, indication they'd be able to return a bunch of players, though.
But but there still wasn't, like, we didn't know fully what that roster was going to look like, right? And so you're kind of throwing a dart and you're kind of setting expectations based on where we feel like the program should be at that time of, you know, a coach going into year number two. I think you almost have to do, unfortunately, the exact same thing going into year number three. Like, where do we feel like they should be? Not like some kind of concrete, like you can point at, well, they've got this guy, we know how they're going to produce, we know how these guys are going to perform, and this is where they need to be going into this year. I think it's just more of kind of like, well, it's year three. Like, they should be top four in the conference, or they should be battling for an NCAA tournament bid. Like, I think it's, again, kind of just like a shot in the dark.
It's really difficult. I can tell you this. They should be better than they have been in the first 2 years, regardless. Eighth place in the AAC is not good enough. Period. It's not good enough. Like, it just isn't. That part I can get my head around. They have to win more games. What can they do with the roster? That's where it's almost like two different evaluations. I think we got a better evaluation of Mills, the coach, this year with the adjustments they made and the way they were able to sort of redefine themselves. And I think that was a major positive for the first 2 years of his tenure. A major positive. The other half now is, can you get the players? It looks different than it used to. That can be a bad thing. Can also be a good thing. It's never been easier to turn over a roster quickly. They were going to turn over this roster despite the transfer portal. They're just graduating a bunch of seniors, right? So the roster was going to turn over either way, whether we were in the transfer portal or not. So on one hand, you can look at that and say, what did they lose? 9 seniors? Whatever it is. Like, whenever you lose that many players in the past, it was almost impossible to, you know, get that turned around. Now it's an expectation because there's so many players in the portal. So never been a better opportunity. We saw the retention piece. That was nice to see. I hope they can retain their two best, you know, two key players that are eligible. But the bigger part will be, because here's the reality, Tommy, like, if they can't this offseason go get a bunch of players that make them good, who's to say that's going to happen in any offseason?
I do think that there's a caveat to all of that, too, and that is, how confident is everybody in where their NIL status is?
Sure.
Amongst teams that are going to be battling for the same caliber of players. And I think that's an extremely important question, and one that, to be completely honest with you, I'm not sure I have very good clarity on. I think it's improved. At least I'd like to think it's improved over the last few years. All indications are that it has from a budget perspective, but I don't know. And maybe that's been released in public. I would guess it's better too, but it's not like we know that for sure. They're not going to be able to go and drop a $2 million bag on a guy like Coleman Hawkins, like K-State did. That's not their MO and that's not realistic. But at the same time, like, you have to add in that caveat to it as well, because it's not just about, all right, he's got to go get the players. Let's go see if they want to come to Wichita State. It's almost more about, like, how do they manage that budget that they have? And how do they allocate those dollars appropriately to make the biggest and best impact on this program next season? That adds a whole new layer into it. I guess it's not really not new anymore, but that adds a whole different layer to it where it's not just a simple conversation of, all right, they need a backcourt that can produce and make shots and blah, blah, blah. It's like, how much can they pay the guys, and how big of a difference maker can these guys be? And it really makes it, again, challenging in that regard. And the fact that it's, you know, we can sit here and we can say with like the Chiefs, when we have this conversation about the salary cap with the Chiefs and how they can work inside the cap and, you know, the money they have available and the clear needs they have and what the market is doing and how much guys at certain positions are getting paid and what they produce. That is nearly impossible to have that same kind of conversation about a program like Wichita State, and not just Wichita State, but schools that same size, to have that financial conversation and what that can do as far as resources and then ultimately production.
I can tell you with moderate certainty that their NIL situation is better now than it was 2 or 3 years ago. Isaac Brown couldn't retain a player because they couldn't get them anything in NIL.
Well, and there was, for whatever reason
you point to.
If you remember, you know, back before the Kevin Saul era at Wichita State, there was a time where there was clear opposition to NIL with Wichita State. Like, it wasn't even like, hey, we've got to operate within the confines of this system. It was like, nope, we're going to fight this. We don't want to do it. Yeah. We're not going to do it. That has changed. So, yeah, I mean, I think we can both say that they're in a better situation, but we don't know what that means.
Well, it means that they should be in a better position in these times right now to do the things that they needed to do. The fact that they were able to retain as much as they did last year also tells me they're making a lot of progress.
But
they're
again,
in pretty good shape.
What does that mean? Like, because I think it's all relative, right? Like, they're better and they should be able to go and get the players they need relative to who? Relative to the other teams in their conference? I think that becomes
Outside of Memphis, if you're
stacking it up against other American teams, because that really, I mean, I think is probably the litmus test. That's probably where
the place to start. We all want it to be against teams across the country, but that we're not there yet. So yes, I think you have to do it against the American. And yes, they are or should be able to be in a better position than everybody outside of Memphis. 100%. Yes, they should be able to. Now they got to go do it. And so I think you can. It's almost like you have two prongs to this. The wins and the losses have not been good enough. The positioning of the program after the return that they made to prominence this year, relatively speaking, I think puts the overall health of the program in a decent... I feel okay about
it's better.
That. The wins and losses part have not been good enough yet. And they're about to have to turn over a roster. That's what has me a little bit concerned. Not saying it's out of the question. Go get the work done now in the offseason. But that's the challenge now. All right, when we come back, we'll switch gears a little bit. If you want to chime in on the Shockers, you still can. In the meantime, I'll Brockton Castor coming your way for another hour next.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be with you here. One more time before we go live out at Intrust Bank Arena. We'll be just north of the arena there. Be doing a lot of stuff with FanFest. I believe that, Tommy, what is, you probably have more insight on this, even though I'm going to be out there, not just for us with the radio, I'll be out there also for TV, it looks like, on Thursday, hanging out, I'm looking forward to it. There's nothing I'd rather do than hang out with a bunch of crazy college basketball fans on Thursday afternoon. Weather's going to be great. It's going to be fun. FanFest, I think I saw there's going to be like food and drinks.
Oh, yeah.
I think they have TVs up there. Like what all is going on there?
Yeah. So it's basically the city of Wichita Parks and Rec. They're, you know, making this probably the biggest overall party around March Madness. And I know that there are a lot of them, a lot of different parties happening downtown around the arena. But this is one that is free, open to the public. You don't need a ticket to go to. And it's in Nasker Park. Which, if you remember, back in 2018, the last time that the tournament was here in Wichita, Nasker Park wasn't Nasker Park. And they've done, a significant change down there. We'll be not just KFH, but just our entire Odyssey family of stations. We are owning the stage down there. So we'll be doing stage announcements, playing music, introducing things like pep bands and cheerleading squads and things like that from all the different teams that are going to be playing in Wichita. And there's going to be food trucks and drinks, and they've got the big video board to play some of the games for the crowd there in attendance. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I think the best part is, like I mentioned, it's free to the public. You don't need a ticket. You don't need to get anything in advance. Just show up and enjoy yourself.
I think the TV part will be – I'll be there with you, I'm pretty
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
It'll be – so you can come even after we get off the air – we'll have presence down there pretty much all day.
Yeah. I plan on being there.
So
our show runs 7 to 11 Thursday and Friday. But then I'll be there all day, all evening, you know, every day of it. So it's going to be a long few days, but it's going to be totally worth it. And even on Friday, when there aren't games scheduled to be played in Wichita, FanFest will still be going on at Nasker Park. We'll still be down there. There's going to be activations and parties and events and things like that.
Good place to come watch games.
Yeah, for sure. And the fact, like, keep in mind, like, you've got fan bases of these teams that win on Thursday that they're going to be hanging around Wichita, you know, for another couple of days because they play again on Saturday. So it's going to be fun events for them to come back down to and all of that on Friday. So it's going to be a blast, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you know what? It's a good point. I haven't even looked at the weather on Friday morning.
It's beautiful.
Is it going to be nice Friday morning?
Well,
too?
I'm sure be chilly, but it's not going to be as cold.
I know it won't be as cold.
It won't be as cold, but it'll be better. Yeah, it'll be better.
But I think we get, let's put on our weather hats here. I think we get the return of, it's going to be windy. It'll be warmer Friday, but it'll be windier. And as far as us, when we're live on the air, we talked about tomorrow, it'll be cold Friday morning. Yeah, we better put some rocks in our pockets. It will be warmer, but the wind will be blowing about 20 miles an hour. So we'll have to bring the windscreens for the microphones. Tony, if you're listening, pack up the windscreens. We're going to need them out there. But it'll be fun. I cannot wait. Here's the other thing that's going to make it even better than it was in 2018. We couldn't bet on games in 2018. Now that we're there, Kansas is a legal betting state. Like all of these, not just the games that are happening right in front of us, but all around, like it's almost like the biggest sports book in the region, right? Like you're all going to be hanging out with basketball fans. Everybody can just hang and there's games all day. It's not just in Wichita. There's games all over the place. It'll be a really cool place to go watch the games in person that are happening inside Intrust Bank Arena. And it'll be a really cool place to go watch all the other dozens of games that are happening all over the country, but watching them just outside Intrust Bank Arena.
I got to tell you, I know you weren't able to be a part of it a year ago, but we did our show live on both Thursday and Friday of the opening rounds of the tournament last year from the Kansas Star Casino, from the FanDuel Sportsbook. That was unlike anything I've ever been a part of. Like you've got, and you know, it's an actual sports book, obviously, but you know, you've got people there ready to watch all the games. They've got every single game on all the major, you know, video boards and everything in the sports book. It was pretty wild. It was pretty frantic. So, take that and multiply it by like 1,000. And I'm sure that's what we'll have outside of the arena in the next couple of days.
God, it's going to be fun. Our 250-1 Shockers to win the NIT bet is dead.
Yeah, that $10 went away pretty quickly.
The only bet I've made so far, which was to parlay the Shockers and my wife's Aztecs, went by the wayside last night in real quick order as North Carolina. You know, I mean, is there any doubt North Carolina's winning their first tournament game after that one? I mean, of course,
they look really good. I mean, I like Ole Miss. I like Chris Beard, so that's who they'll play. So I've got Ole Miss moving on, but man, North Carolina flexed a little bit.
I had that 11 through either way, no matter who the winner was.
It's a good thing it was North Carolina because San Diego State did not look good last night.
No, yeah, they didn't. They did not. And any other game, you had Alabama State with a buzzer beater. It was great.
Oh yeah, that was fun. I mean, like that baseball pass down the full length of the court for the layup.
Can't believe that actually
a second
worked.
To go. That was great. That was the very first game of March Madness is a buzzer beater. I mean, that's what we live for. That's why we do what we do.
Rick asks, is Mahomes going to come for the Tech game? I would say there's a good chance. Yes, I would bet he does. Maybe not for the opener, but for Saturday when it's a nice, 6-3 matchup whether it's Drake or Mizzou. Could you imagine if it's Mizzou Tech? I mean, Mahomes has got to come for
what
that,
a
right?
matchup. That'd be well, because I would imagine.
Even though I have Drake winning that game.
I've got Drake winning that game too. I think either way, it's going to be a phenomenal matchup.
I do too. That'll be one of the better games of the round of 32. That one would be a lot of fun either way, because Drake's so good that no matter what the outcome is, you'll get a tight line and a good game. But yeah, I would guess, Rick, that Mahomes comes through. Yes, I would imagine that will happen.
By the way, I don't know if you're planning on wanting to talk football at all on today's show.
Yes.
A little bit of breaking news from the NFL Network. The Vikings are not actively considering Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback.
That just came down a couple minutes ago. I didn't want to do it in this short segment, but that is the next segment. So that's out there combined with what the Steelers are saying. And I think the appetite for the Rodgers show is dwindling, which will make his courtship interesting. Jay Glazer also said yesterday that I think Glazer and Rappaport, whatever, a couple of the insiders said that Rodgers is planning on taking his time. And boy, I just don't know. I don't know if people have an appetite for that this time around. It sure doesn't seem like as much as they have in the past. We will get into that in the next segment. Didn't want to cram it in here. This is a shorter segment. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every day here on the program. And thanks to Crestview Country Club, another great time of year for them as we get ready to golf a little bit when the weather plays nice. Not today, probably, Tom, even though if you get that wind behind you, you might be able to drive it a little while. That looks pretty good.
Yeah, that's fun. Fun when you get the wind behind you. I don't know if you'd want to do that with the wind into you. That's kind of the trade-off, but it's going to be chilly and windy today, next couple of days. And, I'm sure with, all the tournament games and everything, I don't know, I'd rather be watching a bunch of college basketball than going and playing golf. Once we get through this opening weekend, then yeah, I definitely will be back on the golf course.
We got like a wine tasting coming up, don't we? I think we're doing a wine tasting out there. You guys are dragging me to a wine tasting. So we went to a beer tasting recently and I showed up late and had no issue. I just chugged my beer, right? Like, it's no big deal. Is it acceptable to do the same thing with wine? Like, if you guys have, if I roll in, cause I get off TV a little bit late, but if I roll in there and, you've got like, how many wines did you try last time?
Five or six, I believe.
So can I just have like my lineup of five wines and just start knocking them down? Is that socially acceptable?
That was all your wife. I mean, with the beer tasting, like, she made sure that you had a cup, even though you weren't there, and that they lined it up in front of where you were going to sit. Because I think otherwise they probably would have just not left anything for you. So, I think you can definitely do that. I'm sure that's acceptable.
Okay. That's what we're going to do.
And really, even if it's not acceptable, who cares?
Well, I don't. I'm more, I feel like your wife might care if I embarrass you.
My wife embarrasses me. Like, I embarrass her and she embarrasses me all the time. Like, it's just our life.
That's good to know. Yeah. That's good to know. I will, my wife certainly cares if I embarrass her. Whenever it's my go-to now, as an example, at a restaurant, when I don't know what something is, I, as redneck as I can, ask the wait staff, what is this? Whatever like French word it is for like cheese. I'm like, what is Fontaine? What is that? She gets really embarrassed by that. So I enjoy embarrassing people.
Like the soup du jour. It's the soup of the day. What's the soup of the day?
Greatest movie of all time. By the way. All right. We're going to come back here. We're going to talk about this Aaron Rodgers situation. I don't know what's going to happen here. I think his options are dwindling, as is the appetite for teams to deal with this long drawn out process again. It feels like there's one place he'll go. And there was news that they don't even feel like it's like just come or don't come. Like, we don't care. We'll be fine either with or without you. We'll talk about it next. We've got more to do. We'll give away some HGO this hour. We'll talk to Shreya Slott, our KU insider, as well. It's Sports Daily on a Wednesday.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I wanna hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. We've got Shreya Slott, KU insider, coming in just a little bit. He just dropped a story of taking you kind of inside the life of the college athlete and some of the things online that have been hard on a KU roster and how they're using it. You can check that out. We'll have him in. You can talk to us about it in just a little bit. We're going to talk a little football here, Tommy. Aaron Rodgers. So the reporting yesterday, Cam Hayward came on and said, you know, either come or don't. We don't really care. I'm paraphrasing as far as the Steelers are concerned. And then this morning we get that the Vikings appear to not really be interested anymore. And they're rolling with J.J. McCarthy. I think that's a good sign for J.J. McCarthy. But I think it also is an indication of nobody wanting to wait this long and do the song and dance for a 42-year-old?
Yeah, I think that's a big key of it. I've been critical of Aaron Rodgers for a long time. I think that he's incredibly selfish, and it's all about him. It always has been. It's all about his individual accomplishments, not really ever about the team. Like, all these different things that I've been critical about him for a long time about, I think that teams are finally, like, kind of weighing the benefit versus the cost of having Aaron Rodgers on their team. And part of it is they have to kind of wait around for him. He's not a team focused guy where it's like, hey, I want to do what's best, not only for me, but for the team that I'm going to, you know, potentially go and play for. It's kind of like, nope, you'll wait for me. And I will make my decision when I'm good and ready to make my decision. And I think that the Vikings are a team right now where they're like, you know what? We don't want to deal with this. We don't need to deal with this. We've got a young quarterback that we feel good about. And, you know, assuming that he's healthy, we're going to ride with him. And I think it's a cost-benefit evaluation for teams like the Vikings and the Steelers, probably even the Giants too, that have been vying for Aaron Rodgers' services, where they're just like, it's not worth it. It's not worth the headache anymore.
Sure. And look, we're in a different situation with Rodgers. The Jets were desperate, right? A. B, they thought they were getting still a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback. So they were desperate when they were willing to put up with it. The Vikings aren't desperate. They're not. They're like the furthest from desperate. They feel like they can win a Super Bowl with a quarterback they took in the first round last year. The Steelers are always good, even with bad quarterbacks. So, like, they're not desperate. Mike Tomlin's desperate for Aaron Rodgers. No. You think he's sitting by the phone just like, you know, a teenager waiting on the callback, the teenager's text back, I guess now would be more appropriate. Like, no. Like, these, if those are the two teams, that you think the Giants are desperate? The Giants know they're going to suck either way.
I think the Giants know that, yeah, Aaron Rodgers may give them a few more wins, but he's not leading them to a Super Bowl with the roster that they've got. I mean, remember, like, yeah, the Jets were desperate, but Aaron Rodgers went on a freaking darkness retreat to decide if he wanted to play for the Jets. Like, it's a joke. It's a joke. And yeah, he's won multiple MVPs. He's won a Super Bowl, but it was a long time ago. And I think teams are just like, is it worth the hassle? Is it worth the headache anymore?
I mean, he had a good year last year. He was fine.
He was fine.
He was better. You know, he's better than what a lot of teams roll out there. He was fine. I think there are still...
But it's a cost benefit. Is it worth him being fine? Is the headache worth him being fine?
Well, it's all about, do you have a suitor, right? Like, do you have a team? So the two teams we just mentioned, like, they ain't got time for that. They're not going to mess around with that. I mean, the Steelers could bring back Russell Wilson.
Absolutely.
What's the drop off from Aaron Rodgers to Russell Wilson?
Mike Tomlin and their GM, I heard or read yesterday that they had dinner with Jalen Milroe ahead of the NFL draft. You know, so like they're trying to cover all their bases right now. They don't have all their eggs in the Aaron Rodgers basket. The Jets had all their eggs in the Aaron Rodgers basket. The Steelers don't. The Vikings clearly don't. I don't think the Giants probably do either. So at this point, it's like, yeah, I guess Rodgers, do what you need to do, but nobody's going to be like waiting with bated breath on your decision at the end of it.
There are two teams I think that still might, if things don't work out. The Niners or the Browns. Those could be two teams that get desperate real quick, right? Like if the Niners can't figure it out with Brock Purdy, Rodgers is a pretty good consolation for a team that still feels like they can compete. And the Browns are a mess, right? They know they have nothing. If they decided not to go quarterback early in this draft, they probably still feel like they've got enough talent with Myles Garrett coming back. Right. I think those would be the last two teams that could be desperate potentially, but the two that you would think Aaron Rodgers would want to go to or be most likely are not those two teams. That would be the Vikings and the Steelers. I've said Steelers from day one. The Steelers have always made the most sense to me. I still think that's ultimately what's going to happen, but I think what you're seeing with Cam Hayward is just setting the table now. So that if this happens, like they're not going to be dealing with any of the outside nonsense. Like if Rodgers goes to Pittsburgh, like if Rodgers comes here and is our quarterback, great. But it's not going to be the distraction it's been other places. And honestly, the Steelers are as equipped for that as any team. Like if Aaron Rodgers went to the Steelers, where do you think, even as a quarterback, he would fall in line with loudest and most influential voice in that organization? Because I would say no higher than third, and maybe even lower than that.
Behind Mike Tomlin, behind TJ Watt, and
yes.
Who else?
Cam Hayward.
Yeah, good point.
Ownership.
Yeah.
Which is as strong in Pittsburgh as it is anywhere else. I think, and again, honestly, that's why I think it's a good fit. Because I think Rodgers can strictly go there and play quarterback.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good fit because of that. Rodgers has never operated like that before. Like Rodgers had a tremendous amount of power in Green Bay until he didn't, and then he left. And he was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like as soon as he wasn't the most prominent voice in the room, because Matt LaFleur came in, they had a new GM, like Mike McCarthy let Aaron Rodgers be the voice of the team. And then Matt LaFleur was like, no, we're not doing this anymore. They had a new GM, said, nope, we're not doing this anymore. They drafted Jordan Love. Aaron Rodgers took exception to that, was upset that he wasn't the top dog in the room anymore, even though he was, but his perception was that he wasn't the most influential voice anymore. And then he threatened to retire and leave, like all this stuff.
We ran McCarthy out of town.
He's
not going to do that here.
But I don't think he's never operated where he's just been a quarterback before. He's always needed to be the smartest guy in the room, the loudest voice in the room.
He's going to get a chance.
But I don't think that he knows how to operate like that. And I'm not sure he wants to operate like that. In my opinion, if there is, you know, not as much of a desire to entertain just the lunacy around Aaron Rodgers like there has been in years past, and there's not an appetite around that anymore, I think Aaron Rodgers would rather walk away and retire.
Maybe.
I think that that's going to be a part of it. If he doesn't feel like he's desired, you know, and lusted after even by these organizations, I think he'd rather just take his ball and go home.
Yeah, I mean, so
I don't think he's ever going to humble himself.
I think what I'm saying is the
not most influential person in the organization. Because even with the Jets, when the Jets were, you know, in the middle of a dumpster fire, even though for a period of time Rodgers was not playing well to his standards, Robert Saleh got fired. You know, like there were all of these different changes that it wasn't like Aaron Rodgers was having the finger pointed at him. It was everybody else around him. He had a ton of power.
He wasn't that bad last year. I think my point is it's going to be crystal clear If Rodgers goes to Pittsburgh, it'll be crystal clear that that's not the same situation. So if he does decide to go there, he will have embraced that, because I think they're going to make that right up at the front very clear to him that they're not going to deal with any distractions. And so for Rodgers, it's like, okay, I can go there and try to win a Super Bowl or not. And it's not about all the other stuff. And so we'll find out. And I'm with you. I mean, if Rodgers doesn't want to do that, he can just walk away. But if he does go to Pittsburgh, which is why I think it's a good fit, like if he goes there, that will be that'll be out in the open. It already is. Look at what Cam Hayward's saying, right? Like they're already telling you that without telling you that. And we knew that anyway with Mike Tomlin. Like Mike Tomlin, he's not going to put up with that crap. He's just not. And they don't need to be desperate with it either. The one thing I don't think they can do is bring in like Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. That would obviously be a problem. Like you're going to have to just make your call at some point. There's some more reporting on the Vikings piece of this, which of course is that they are not going to do anything with Aaron Rodgers. They don't consider him an option, according to Kevin Seifert of ESPN and Tom Pelissero, leaving J.J. McCarthy atop the quarterback depth chart. It was never likely. It had been discussed. Other people are backing that up. Yes, they had discussed it, but it was, as we assumed, as more of like a backup plan to J.J. McCarthy. And so maybe that tells you that. And I think what gets interesting is, was it Rodgers that wasn't interested in that? And I would get him not being interested in being a backup plan. Like I get that part of it. He wouldn't be a backup plan in Pittsburgh. He'd be the starter. But if you go to the Vikings, that is always going to be up in the air. Like
there's going to end up being a quarterback controversy at some point or another, where even right. if J.J. McCarthy wasn't ready to go at the start of the season, let's say midway through the season, he's ready to come back. Then the conversation is, does Rodgers give up the throne? Does he graciously step aside for the future quarterback? Because he didn't do that in Green Bay for Jordan Love. He would have rather left. And so I don't think he would have been able to humble himself, you know, to be able to do that at some point. And I think the Vikings probably would have felt like they needed to hang on and let Rodgers play out the season or whatever. And then you've got another year of J.J. McCarthy not playing. And this time, more than likely healthy and not playing.
I'm glad it's not Minnesota, because I want to see J.J. McCarthy. And I don't want him to deal with that. The Giants, according to Fox Sports, I'm looking up at it right now. He's focused on the Steelers and the Giants. The Giants, I mean, the Daboll and those guys might be desperate enough. I don't think the door's totally closed on the Giants, by the way. If they had any sort of competent quarterback play, they could make a playoff run. That's not crazy to say with better quarterback play.
They made a playoff run a couple of years ago with Daniel Jones at quarterback.
Right, that's
and then
what
things
I mean.
Kind of
and
fell
the roster
apart.
Hasn't changed that much yeah. since then.
Well, they don't have Saquon anymore. So like that's a major
that's
piece
the big
of it.
One. But they also have Malik Nabers, and right. they have, you know, they've got some talent.
And they like Tyrone Tracy. I mean,
he was fine.
He's not Saquon, but I mean they feel like he's fairly competent. I did see that Bill Cowher, and he's obviously very well connected to the Steelers organization. He gave a ringing endorsement for Russell Wilson to come back as the starting quarterback for the Steelers. He was on Dan Patrick and said that he felt like familiarity was the most important thing, and that Russell Wilson would be the best fit for the Steelers to be their starting quarterback. Honestly, even though I'm not a Russell Wilson fan either, I kind of agree with him. I kind of feel like if I'm Mike Tomlin, I don't need the headache of Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, while things didn't end particularly well for the Steelers last season, I feel like I almost value the organizational harmony a little bit more, and the way that, you know, I felt like Russell Wilson kind of redeemed himself a little bit after the disastrous run in Denver and played decently well in his time in Pittsburgh. If it's me, if I'm Mike Tomlin, I'm going to advocate for Russell Wilson and then maybe draft a quarterback in the NFL draft. I don't know if I want to deal with the headache of Aaron Rodgers.
Let's put their season side by side. 336 attempts for Wilson. Just in so Rodgers played.
He played more. I mean, Justin
quite
Fields
a great deal
in
more.
Pittsburgh, yeah.
So the stats are going to be a little bit inflated. But Russell Wilson had a higher completion percentage. Slightly, they were very close. Yards per game were very close. Wilson threw 16 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. Rodgers threw 28 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. Very, very, very close. They were pretty close to the same
player. And you get the familiarity of Wilson already in the system, sure. already in the organization.
I would tell you that I think Rodgers would be better if you took all, just like just on the field, like if you took all the other stuff and put it to the side and just said, which quarterback do I think when the game ends only gives the Steelers a better chance to win that? And I would say Rodgers still, but unfortunately you don't get to do that. You have to take it in totality. And Russell Wilson's done a nice job of kind of cleaning some of that up, because it was a messy ending in Denver for him too. And it was a messy ending in Seattle.
Yeah, I think he kind of redeemed himself.
He's not immune to any of this stuff either.
I thought he handled himself really well in Pittsburgh. I've been critical of Russell Wilson, and I like making fun of him and joking around about him. I thought he redeemed himself pretty decently. I thought he humbled himself well, especially knowing that he came into Pittsburgh and, you know, it was unclear about whether it would be him or Justin Fields. I thought he handled it really well. Of course, it ultimately ended up being him for the majority of the season. But at the end of the day, again, if I'm Mike Tomlin, I feel better with the relationship that I built with Russell Wilson for another season than trying to bring in a 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers who has a long history of undermining almost everything that his head coach ever wants to do. To me, that just, you know, even and knowing that the stat line from a season ago is very comparable between the two, give me Russell Wilson every day of the week if I'm Mike Tomlin for next season.
I don't know that I agree with that. I don't vehemently disagree with it. I think Rodgers gives him a better chance to win a Super Bowl than Russell Wilson does at this point. That's I'd really have to think about that, because Pickens is a problem. Wilson still throws that deep ball perfect for Pickens. Like, that fit's still there, but Pickens is such a knucklehead sometimes. Like, if you took that piece of it out of the equation, I would definitely say I like Rodgers better. My concern with Wilson is, what if they have a Pickens issue next year? Then I don't think Russell Wilson gives you much at all. Aaron Rodgers absolutely still would.
I don't think that either Wilson or Rodgers, if I'm being completely honest, will lead them to a Super Bowl.
No, I don't either. But I'm saying better chance.
Right, but I don't think either one of them will do it. But if you're looking at organizational harmony that can hurt a team long term, give me Wilson, because the Jets continue to be in, you know, basically survival mode. And I think Aaron Glenn can stabilize things for them a little bit. You know, they've had to do a hard reset from the Aaron Rodgers era. Green Bay, to an extent, had to clean a bunch of things up and bring in a new coach after Rodgers ran McCarthy out of town. And, you know, the Jordan Love era kind of got off to a little bit of a rocky start. I just think that what Aaron Rodgers can leave in his wake after he leaves an organization is not worth the risk, because I don't think either one of them are going to lead them to a championship. But for the future, I'd rather have the stability of Russell Wilson over the complete unpredictability of what Aaron Rodgers can do to you in the moment, and then the way he can potentially leave your organization when he's all said and done in shambles. And that's what happened with the Jets.
When the season started last year, Rodgers was pretty well behaved, though. Like, once they got through the offseason.
And then they started the year, 1-4 or something like that?
No,
and then
I know.
Things went off the rails quick.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about he was able to just, like, settle in and play quarterback, I think. But look, the Steelers just can't get a quarterback solved to save their lives, right? Like, if these are their options, they're not the worst options in the world, but they've got to find a long-term solution. But it's not going to be the Vikings. That's the news we learned today. The reports are that it's either the Steelers or the Giants, if both of those teams obviously are interested in Rodgers' services. You know, maybe Russell Wilson just ends up in the place that Aaron Rodgers doesn't, one way or the other. But that's sort of the big NFL news. We got the introduction, or the official, you know, ink on paper for the Bengals yesterday, Tommy, and the two wide receivers. Obviously, if you saw some of the video, it means a ton to Joe Burrow. Looks great for fantasy football. It's great for Burrow, who I think is as good as any quarterback in this league. I just don't know if it helps the Bengals get to where they need to be. We'll find out. They got a lot of pressure now. They got a lot of pressure in the draft to try and make up for some deficiencies that tying up that money is going to create for them. I think those are the big headlines from the NFL yesterday. Things are cooling a little bit as we head to the draft. Certainly.
Happy birthday, Andy Reid, by the way. Today is Big Red's birthday.
Are we all supposed to, we all go have a cheeseburger today?
A double
to celebrate?
A double cheeseburger in honor of his birthday.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
We welcome in Shreyas Lada, our KU insider here to the program. Glad to have Shreyas with us here. Shreyas, you got a nice story dropping today, taking people inside what it's like to be a college athlete. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Folks can find it right now at the KC Star. But I want to talk about Arkansas first, something else you wrote about. You called it not lucky that that KU matched up with Arkansas and then a little less so with St. John's. I actually think it's the perfect draw. If, when I look at the tens and when I look at the what is it, twos, I don't know that they were going to get much better stylistically than what they were able to get in this one. Tennessee, Michigan State, kind of the same vibe as St. John's. But when we know KU can get shot out of the gym, getting a couple teams that don't shoot the ball very well is as good as I think you could hope for Kansas.
Yeah, I think my deeming of not lucky was more so because I guess technically they could have had one easier draw. I think they were right. The second easiest, this thing. I think St. John's, if they make it past, which I think they will, if they make it, St. John's is an interesting thing because their defense is phenomenal, right? And KU's defense is not, or KU's offense isn't great, but their offense is pretty bad. So in a sense, there is a path to the Sweet 16 for Kansas because both the teams they play offensively are not fantastic. Especially with Arkansas, they're kind of a, I feel like the MO for this team, it feels like for years, no matter their coaches, athletic, long, lengthy dudes that play good defense and then run up and down the court and they don't make a lot of threes. I think they're 200th and like ninth or something like that in 3-point rate. I think it's much worse than that. Actually, let me look 240. 201. And then the one thing that teams do well against KU is rebound the ball. Recently, they're like 249th in offensive rebounding. So Kansas does a good job on the offensive rebounding side of things, but their defensive rebounding has needed some help in recent days, recent games. So the fact that I think they got Arkansas is a lucky draw in that sense. But the one thing that to me that I look at this matchup and I'm worried about is, you know, Kansas plays a guy like, you know, Boogie Flynn coming back. That's a real NBA lottery talent, you know, level player. Kansas doesn't have a lot of those guys. They, I don't think they have anybody on that roster that's even a first round pick this year. If any of all of them declared, not a single one of them would be picking the first round. Maybe Flory at the end of it, just because, you know, everyone loves the illusion of what they could be because they're young. It's the NBA. But I think that's the thing with this roster that Cal has put together. You know, they have some young studs that, you who knows, they could have a good game against this Kansas defense. And I think for me, I'm not worried about this game if I'm a Kansas fan. But also, is there any game you can't worry about? Because they haven't shown consistency game in, game out, no matter the opponent. Like, for me, to believe that they can make a run to the Elite Eight or Sweet 16, I got to see them do it. We haven't seen them win two straight games that often this year. I think they beat Arkansas. I think they lose to St. John's. But I could be wrong. I've been wrong before.
You know, it's interesting, Shreyas, because Kansas in recent weeks, in recent games, they have made even mediocre three-point shooting teams look outstanding shooting the three. And they've honestly left guys wide open to shoot threes. And whether we're talking about coming off of ball screens poorly or not closing out, not getting a hand up, whatever it is, I feel like with a team like Arkansas and even St. John, like neither of these teams shoot the three particularly well. I don't think that Kansas has to play lockdown perimeter defense. They just need to do slightly better than what they've been able to do as of late in defending the three.
I completely agree. They've let bad three-point shooting teams look good, or mediocre three-point shooting teams is probably the better word here in some of these games, look really good. But honestly, on the flip side of that, I don't know if you guys noticed this. They, in the Big 12 tournament, they hit double-digit three-point makes for the first time all year in consecutive games. They haven't done that all year. That, to me, if you're a Kansas fan, that's a little nugget that I'm like, okay, I feel good. And I've been saying it all year, right? If you're not going to defend the three well, then you have to be able to make threes on the other end, which they haven't done. But Zeke Mayo is as hot as he's been all year. Three straight games with five made three-pointers. If he can carry that over to tournament play, they're probably going to steal a game or two that they have no business winning. like St. John's on paper is a better team than Kansas, even if they're deficient offensively. They're the number one team in the nation on defense. They're led by a guy who was a Kansas guy back in the day, Zuby Ejiofor. Obviously transferred first year on the beat for me. A year after that, I thought he would stay. Obviously,
Hunter good.
Coming in, really good. So there's a little bit of that storyline. And they have a great coach in Pitino. And Cal, of course, is a great coach for Arkansas. So, you know, it's such an interesting draw for me with Kansas because there's so many different possibilities of what this KU team could look like that I can't really predict what's going to happen until the game plays out, you know?
I totally agree with that. Like, I just think I and it's this is what gets so weird. Like, I don't think Arkansas and St. John's are bad. I think they're both really good and capable of being really good. I just think they happen to be stylistically what kind of what Kansas has to see. Right. Like Kansas kind of has to see that if they're going to have a chance because they can. It's too we've seen it a billion times this year. Teams that hit three pointers, Kansas can't defend it well. And so we've been looking at it for a long time. I've had St. John's circled forever. Like I'll take my chances there with Kansas just trying to match up defensively with somebody that it already struggles on offense.
I completely agree.
Can they play Diggy? By the way, Diggy, I know that Bill Self has been frustrated with his defense. We've asked this question to you before. Can they play Diggy? Is he kind of a, if they need a spurt of offense, they can get a spurt of offense from him?
I think they need to play Diggy. I don't know if you're going to play Diggy a lot of minutes. Maybe it's only 5, 10, 15 minutes a game. But they have to play Diggy because he's the only guy on the bench that has any semblance of ability to get a bucket on demand. Right? Flory isn't there yet. You know, AJ Storr is too inconsistent. You know, Diggy, Shaquille Moore is recovering back from injury. You know, I really think they need Diggy to be able to hit like maybe 2 threes a game in every tournament game. That would go a long way, I think, for them to win games, but also take a lot of pressure off guys like Zeke and DeJuan, who are going to have to make open threes in this tournament if they want to go far, and take pressure off a guy like Hunter Dickinson, where he's making threes, but can we really, rely on him to make 2 threes a game like he did in the Big 12 tournament? I don't think so. So I do think, you know, the leash on him is going to be short, just because if Shaquille Moore is healthy, that means, or relatively getting back to health, then I expect him to cut into some minutes there because he's a better defender than Diggy is, and he can make the 3-point shot. But I think Diggy's usage is 100% going to depend on can Arkansas take advantage of his porous defense because he's just a shorter guy. And if they can, then he will be taken out of the game quick, in my opinion.
So not to switch gears away from the tournament, Sharias, but I want to make sure we've got time to talk about your article that came out earlier this morning. And you and I were talking about it a little bit yesterday before it dropped, just the how social media is impacting this KU team. It's kind of a look behind the scenes on that. And of course, it was a big story a few weeks ago, Zeke Mayo receiving death threats and things like that on social media. Discuss a little bit about the origin of this story, what prompted you to write it, and some of the interesting things you found out.
Yeah, you know, funny enough, I was kind of chasing this story a couple of weeks before the Zeke Mayo thing happened. And the Zeke Mayo thing happened and it kind of blew up on me a little bit because I wasn't sure how many people were going to be willing to talk about it, right? Openly and candidly. And I had some sources on the KU side that were like, okay, I don't think I can talk, you know, that we're non-players. And I understood, right? Like, you know, it's kind of inflammatory thing to talk about something. And Zeke said it best in the article where it's hard to talk about this thing publicly because there's not a lot of empathy for guys who make money these days, right? These guys are college athletes, but we treat them like professionals because they get paid hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions of dollars. And, you know, I think one of the most interesting things to me learning about is how online this KU men's basketball team is. DeJuan Harris has screenshots saved of tweets dating back to whenever. He sends it to friends, players, family members as motivation, positive, negative, whatever the tweets are. Grady Dick, Hunter Dickinson talked about how bad sports gambling has gotten where they'll have literal people in their comments be like, you had the best game of your life, that quote Grady gave. And someone would be like, why didn't you get one more rebound? Go die. That's the kind of pressure these guys are having to go through. And kind of, you know, what I learned is Yes, these guys are terminally online. Yes, I think that's normal in every single college basketball team in the nation because they're 20, or, you know, 18 to 25 year olds. And yes, they probably should log off sometimes, but, you know, everyone has their own experience for it. I mean, with Zeke Mayo, he said, he told me he regretted, you know, sharing the tweets because at the end of the day, he was like, people called him soft. And, you know, that wasn't a thing where he was seeking empathy. He just wanted to showcase this is what we have to go through as athletes. And I think that's the most important thing you can take away from that story is we don't understand the withdrawal, like the negative or positive they get, no matter. This Kansas team is underwhelmed throughout this season, and it has been a story. I don't know, you guys have seen it on social media, how frustrated people are. And these guys are seeing it. They pay attention to it. They read it. They keep it as motivation, or maybe that even messes with their mind a little bit. I mean, like Mayo said. And, you know, I think the biggest thing I can say to any fan or anybody, even media member, is remember when you're writing something, the other person is a human being at the end of the day. And I think that's something that we don't remember sometimes when we're frustrated with it.
I think, too, like the conversations that you have with people we have here are far more they're almost never personal attacks, especially for young people and unwarranted. Mm-hmm. But it's a societal problem. The online voice is the minority. It just has the biggest megaphone. Most people don't wish ill on any of these dudes, but that the problem is nobody's like, that's what you see. And for those people that might say, oh, they're making money, you can't do that, you just got to deal with it. I've been front public facing for 20 years. And as much as I want to say, oh, you just ignore it. Somebody says something that pisses you off, it pisses you off. Like, I mean, you know, like what you can say, you can just ignore it and not pay attention to it, but you have this natural inclination, I think, to defend yourself. And it's not as simple as them unplugging. They have their livelihood tied to online promotion, to like all the things that they're trying to do for their brand and their image. So it's not as simple as just like, I'd love to go in a cave and never look at social media again. I'm 100% honest about that. Yeah. I would love it, but I can't do that, right? It's part of what we do for a living. Same thing for them. They can't just log off. So it's interesting. And I worry about that. They're young people. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if you're rich, poor, whatever. You're young. Like, you haven't developed the life skills to deal with that. It's great stuff. Great insight. You can find it there at the KC Star. Shreyas has it tweeted. We'll get that. I'll retweet that too. Shreyas, real quick. You said you like him against Arkansas. Do you like him against St. John's? If they get to that?
I don't. Because who am I to believe that this team can win two games in a row until they do it? I just want to see it. I do think they're better the last couple of weeks than they looked in that spurt where they're losing to like call, you know, BYU and Utah and stuff like that. But I just want to see them put their money where their mouth is. I've heard it a lot. New season, new season, new season. Okay. Well, this is it. It's shut up or it's over.
Get it done. They'll have a couple of chances at it. Shreyas, we appreciate it one way or the other. We'll be back here to talk about it, whether the season's over or they're playing in the Sweet 16 next week. Good stuff in the story. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, that'll do it for us here on Sports Daily. So glad that you've been here with us as we make our way through and get ready for a big next couple of days, Tommy. Get your beauty rest. Bundle up tomorrow. We got 4 hours Thursday, 4 hours Friday out at Intrust Bank Arena.
Yeah, Tony Dusing, our program director, came in a little bit ago, said he's going to wear his ski pants tomorrow. It's going to be chilly. We hope that people will come out early and join us. I know FanFest officially kicks off at 10 a.m., but I would imagine once the sun comes up, I mean, people are going to be filtering down there and having a great time. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Game start at 11. And they start in Wichita at 1, but nationwide they start at 11. So you can come down and start watching games, hang out with us right there as we leave the air. So we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a blast. We'll be there tomorrow. Come say hi. 4 hours live out at Intrust Bank Arena. Thanks to Shreyas Lada for stopping by. Check out his great work at KC Star. For Tommy, for Max, I'm Jacob. We'll see you live tomorrow from Intrust.